Hi, everyone. Dr. Will Horton here. I get to interview Paul Ramsey, one of the people I've known for, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years now, give or take a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And I wanted to pick his brain because last year he did something fascinating, something a lot of people have talked about. He interviewed how many people last year?
Well, if you go by people, it was like 63 people. But then some of them were doing more than one presentation. So I ended up doing 106 interviews total.
Okay. So he did, because, you know, if you study marketing and internet, they always say interview people, interview people, interview people, because it boosts your thing. But also you learn a lot as you interview. So he's interviewed 63 people, 108 interviews, you just said, last year. I was one of, well, a couple of times.
We did a couple. Yeah, we did more than one.
Taught, and he did it for the National Guild of Hypnotists, an organization we're both long-term members, very fond of. I've been a member since, I don't want to say, the mid-80s. And, you know, been to like 30 conferences, and we'll be there this year. And so before he gets launched on this back-breaking, grueling schedule of interviewing all these people, I thought I'd pick his brain because, like I said, and then I'll ask him some questions, but, you know, all these internet gurus, one of the things they say is, you know, start a podcast, interview people, or just interview people because it links you with other people. And sometimes those people will use the interview you do to market, and suddenly you're seen in places you wouldn't be seen. So what did you learn, Mr. Paul? Just give us an overview of where you got the idea, how it got started. I know it took a while to come to fruition. Yeah, no, and what did you learn?
Oh, it was such a great process. Well, you know, it's funny, Will. I first came up with the idea, and I didn't come up with the idea overall. It's exactly like you said. I've seen people over and over again. And I mean, the best examples are outside of our industry, right? I mean, if you look at Tim Ferriss is great, right? Like Tim Ferriss wrote, I don't have it here.
4-hour work week.
I have it. Tools of Titans.
Yes.
You know, Tim Ferriss has
on my phone.
Tools of Titans that's this thick. And it's all just from the transcripts of the people that he's interviewed in, you know, like 40 different industries all over the world. I mean, it's such a great example of how you can build brand and how you can learn best practices. It's my favorite example probably. But there's lots of other, you know, examples of that. And so probably about 4 years ago, maybe now, I had been watching these kinds of, you know, podcasts and vlogs and interview series. And I thought, man, I should be doing this. Well, I'll tell you, now I'm remembering as I talk about it, excuse me for being sort of disjointed. What actually inspired me the most was Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I watched that the first season that it came out, and I thought, this is so much fun. All he's doing is getting together with people who love what he loves and sharing, having a conversation about what they love. And I was like, I should be doing this. I should be sitting down with other hypnotists and talking about what we love about our work. This is so like, duh. And so I, at the time that I had the idea of like, do the same thing, it was like 3 weeks before convention. So I zipped out an email to Elsom Eldridge and I said, Elsom, could I just interview people who are going to present at convention? And he was like, yeah, sure. And so I interviewed like 20 people in 2 weeks. I really cranked out as much as I could. And I had like 20 or 21 interviews in a 2-week period. By the time I got them done, it was right before convention. But even then, we were able to really get, I think it was something like 1500 views on those interviews in like a 2-week period. And I keep checking it every now and then. And the last time I checked it, we're up to almost, this is like 9,000 views of that old interview series. So people are still watching those interviews 3 or 4 years later, whatever it is. So then I got busy and I had a couple years where I couldn't go to the convention because my stage hypnotism tour was in the way and I, you know, I had shows. And so then last year it worked out that I could go again, and I thought, I want to do that again. That was fun, but I want to really do it. So I contacted Elsom like way in advance, and I said, I want to do even more. And he goes, well, how many would you do? And I'll say, I said, I'll do as many as I can do as long as you let me start soon. And he said, okay. And so I started on St. Patrick's Day. You were the first person I interviewed.
Yeah, because it was addictions. And what a day for addiction. An Irishman.
Yeah, that was, and that was it. And then I did those. And it was great. And the first thing I'd say that I learned from that is how wonderful the people in our profession really are in terms of their genuine desire to help other human beings. You know, you tend to, you think, well, duh, I know that. But no, you don't until you really make an effort to talk to a big slice of people from our profession. It gets easy to think, well, these are just people trying to make a living. That's fine. They're trying to run a business. But when you really sit and talk with them about whatever the thing is that they like to do the most in their business, and that's what these presenters are doing, right? They're specializing on addiction, or they're specializing in weight loss, or they're specializing in smoking cessation, or all these different things. And when you talk with them about it, they get so genuinely happy talking about how they help people. And that was the big thing that I loved to be reminded. I mean, that's why I'm in it too, right? Like, but to know that we're a community of people who want to help people. And that was just like really nice to be able to be part of that and be reminded of that. The other thing that I learned from it is sort of, it's not bad, but it was a little sad, is there's a real tendency when I do these interviews with people, they get nervous. They feel like they're not, almost like, they don't say it, but you can tell, they almost feel like they're not worthy of being interviewed. And it's like, and I think we all do that, right? We all have times where we go, who am I? What do you mean you want to interview me? Who am I to be interviewed? And it's like, who are you? You're the person who does this. You do it all the time. You've committed to it in your profession. And you're specialized enough that you've submitted a proposal and you're presenting at the convention. Like, that's who you are, right? People are kind of hard on themselves. That's the other thing that I was reminded of, is that, you know, people don't give themselves enough credit for how they are a specialist, for how they are an expert in their field in a particular area of study or sub-study within hypnotism in this case. So, you know, that's another thing that I really came away from. I was like, man, so people have all this joy that they get from doing the work, but they don't really recognize themselves for doing that work. And they ought to be a little nicer to themselves, you know, like, and like pat themselves on the back a little bit more. Those are probably the two biggest things. The third thing is small, but I love talking about it, is out of the 106 interviews I did, out of the 63 hypnotists that I interviewed, I think it's so interesting about our profession, only one, Jacob Bimblich, was the only hypnotist I interviewed who knew from his childhood that he wanted to be a hypnotist. And I think that's fascinating, that so overwhelmingly in our profession, people come to it after blah, blah, and blah, usually. I was this, I did this for a while, you know. Jacob was the only hypnotist I interviewed who said, I knew when I was 9 years old that I wanted to be a hypnotist. And he told me the whole story of it, you know. This profession tends to be one in which people need to be convinced, even the people who practice it, you know, like they need to have the themes are, I got really sick, or I had a terrible injury, and I needed to wait to get better or to manage my pain, and nothing else was working. So I got desperate and I tried hypnosis, and it was amazing. And it made such a powerful impact on me that then I became a hypnotist. That's one of the big themes. The other theme is, I was at a point in my life where I just was sort of like not knowing what to do next. And somebody told me they thought I'd be good at it. So like in a moment of inspiration that comes from outside of themselves, from another person saying, I think you could do this. Those are probably like the two big themes, is some kind of sickness or injury, or I just had somebody tell me, you know, I think you'd be good if you were a hypnotist. And those are the two big ones. It's pretty fascinating.
Oh, cool. Cool. And how did you use some of this information in your own life? Because you heard all this different stuff and all this cool stuff.
There were little things. I mean, there was little things that were really important for me. I mean, just sort of the serendipity of it is at the time, at one portion of the time that I was doing the interviews, like I said, went from St. Patrick's Day, so March 17th, all the way to the first week of August, right before we were ready to head out for convention, basically. In April of 2017, my partner Sandra needed to have a brain surgery for an aneurysm in her brain. And we were working, she was really committed to using hypnosis as much as possible as part of that experience. And so I was lucky to interview Peter Blum, who specializes, his like specialty is using music and sound to help people in their hypnosis experience. And so the same day that I was going to start meeting with Sandra and talking about building an approach to her pre-surgery experience, surgery experience, and post-surgery experience, I interviewed Jacob, and he was talking about the use of like tuning forks. And so when I finished recording with him that day, I said, hey, can I ask you, can I ask your advice about this? And I explained it all to him. And so he helped me figure out some ways to basically anchor her to a tuning fork so that we could take her deep, deep into hypnosis. And one of the challenges that she described is that she would go so deep into hypnosis that when a nurse or a doctor would come in and want to talk to her, she would struggle getting up to a point of like being able to have really clear conversation. And that would freak them out. They'd be like, what's going on with her? We haven't even given her any meds. And she acts like she's deeply sedated. And I'm like, yeah, it's the hypnosis. So what we did was we anchored her to a tuning fork where when they would come in, I would strike the tuning fork and hold it up to her ear. And that vibration would bring her back up, right? And then she could talk and talk and talk. And then we'd just fractionate back down again afterward. And it worked wonderfully. So there were some little things like that that were really cool about being able to have those interviews and learn from folks in ways that were quickly applicable for me. That was really nice.
Okay. And you know, one of the things from watching a lot of those interviews, I think I watched almost all of them because I tried to click like and do all that stuff as we were supposed to do,
yeah.
Is like you said, I learned a lot about a lot of people that I didn't know. And what was interesting for me as a mature hypnotist, that sounds good.
That's a nice way of putting it. I like that.
Being around 30, but it's like, you know, a lot of us over the years would go to a lot of conferences, NGH, there used to be other conferences, but, you know, now there's still conferences all over. And it's all about the bonding and the sharing. And also, you know, it every time I leave a conference, it fires you up. A couple weeks ago, yeah. I had to go to it was a Florida Psych Association conference for my CEUs. And certain things you have to do live in the state of Florida. You can't do them online. And so I did one thing. It was kind of interesting. After another seminar I went to, and I shared it with you through something else, you know, that I learned, you know, after doing this for all these years, damn near 40 years, a very simple response was taught to me, which is, you know, and I understand the reticular activating system. I trained in neuropsychology, for God's sakes. And so, but if the questions you ask yourself will tune your reticular activating system, right?
Right.
When I was in one period of my life, it was, you know, for combat and to keep alive and things like this. So anyway, I was, and I teach that now. It's like, what questions are you asking when you walk into something? And usually when I'd go to these CEUs things, I'd walk in like, God damn it, this is going to suck. I hope I have enough Starbucks, you know, because it's usually a dry kind of, you know, it's the, you know, and I'm like, but I went into this one thinking how, because after you and some people, I'm like, how can I enjoy this? Who am I going to meet that's really cool? How much fun can I have? And then because of what I do for a living, how can I really let my skills go and really mess with these people? They're psychologists and neuropsychs guys and prescribing psychologists. I go, they won't have a clue what I'm doing, you know. And so I was just having a blast and ended up being a great conference.
That's awesome.
Plus, by the way, they also had all these professional speakers there. So I'm having all this fun. And, you know, I met the guy that's one of the top sports hypnotists in the country. You know, he lives in Bradenton where that IMG Academy is, and he's always training people. And I'm like, and afterwards, I'm thinking, gee, how many times you get to meet people that, you know, do the psych stuff for like Tom Brady and when Peyton Manning was playing and Drew Brees. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And to have them go, hey, if you're ever in the neighborhood, stop in. We'll get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, that's cool.
But how jazzed I was leaving. So I was just talking to somebody today, and I said for about 20 years from the mid-80s to the mid-2000s, you know, Dwight called me the bad penny, right? Because I showed up at every conference you could possibly imagine if it fit my schedule. But I was learning so much.
Yeah.
You know, and people and all that. So, and just look at all the people you got to my dog. Say hi.
Aww.
Yeah. I forgot to lock him up.
That's all right.
So anyway, so you got to bond with a lot of people and get to know people. And we always forget just by these, even these video interviews now, it's like, you know, how comfortable, this is the question. Then you show up at the conference, right? And I know some of these people you might've saw in passing. Some was their first year, but it was like, hey, old home week.
Yeah.
With some of these people.
Totally.
Right. And what's that experience? Cause I want to pick your brain on that.
Well, so yeah. So then there's two aspects of that. The first one being when you acquire 63 faces that some of them you're familiar with, but a lot of them you're not. There's that thing that that when you see someone on a video or TV, that's a little different when you then are in a different context and you see them in person. So the first thing that I felt terrible about was the first day of the conference, people kept coming up to me and going, hey, and I'd be like, hey, person. Like, because I just...
Middle-aged white male?
Yeah. And I felt really bad about that because I want everyone to feel like I'm connect, you know, like I want to connect with people. And they'd go, you don't remember me right now. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry, but I don't. Like, there's so many people I interviewed and they're like, that's okay. And then as soon as they'd say the name, I'd be like, idiot. Yeah, duh. Like, you know. So that was a little bad, as I was like, felt bad that I didn't have that better retention. The other part of it that was really nice is it let me have those follow-up conversations with people where I've already broken the ice, you know, by talking about what we both care about. And then I got to have really nice conversations with people afterward about like, what's next? What do they want to do next? You know, how do they want to contribute? How could I maybe contribute to them? All that kind of stuff where I feel like those interviews have helped put me in a position where I can make a better impact on my community. And that's something that I care about. I want to do that. It was really nice. It was really nice to be able to advance those kind of connections and conversations with people.
And I just want your feedback on, isn't it interesting when you do a lot of videos and, you know, I was the first guy to do home study NLP courses. And so it's always interesting that you, like you say, someone will come up and they'll just start in the middle of a conversation because they've had this conversation to the TV, you know, or to the vid, to the, you know, and it's like, and then it was funny. I got to go to an internet marketing thing. I flew out to a training once that I'd watched all these guys' videos, and it put me back on the other side where I knew it was like, oh, I know these guys. They know me. And they're like, no, I'm a credit card number who bought a program.
Right. Right.
But it was, so that's kind of fun, but you get to meet all these people and link with them. And one of the interesting things I think about going to the conference, National Guild or any of the conferences, I like the National Guild, and other conferences is whatever you really want. Let's say you just learned hypnosis or you're rather new. And so you're doing this, whatever you want to get into. If you go to the conferences and you're an expert at this now, there's people with specialties in everything.
Yeah.
You know? And as our friend Dan Candell, you know, up in your neck of the woods says, you know what? If you go an inch wide and a mile deep, right, as a specialist,
you'll
make a lot of money. And, you know, one of my friends is a orthopedic doctor, and he goes, oh, yeah, in medicine, you know, I'm kind of a generalist as an orthopedic, but most guys, they only do knees. That's it. They'll just do a knee. You know, I just met with a guy for my knee at the VA. And yet in hypnosis, sometimes we shy away from that.
Yeah.
Right. But you look at people that are really successful, both in a, in a impacts thing to help their communities. And honestly, sometimes very lucratively, if you become the guy, whether it's, you know, like Dan and his, what's his big thing? Stress in small business guys, I think is his big thing. You know, he's doing 10 sessions a week online, but when you find out what he charges for a session, you're like, this is pretty good.
Right.
You know, and so you get to, you know, so these interviews are wonderful to find out. And then when you go to the conference, it's like, okay, I want to learn stage hypnosis. I'm going to pick Paul's brain. I'm going to pick a Michael DeShalt's brain, of course, Jerry Valley and Tommy V, because that's what they do. And they'll, and the other thing you just shared on, and I want you to share some more, is how open most of the hypnotists are. I will admit, not all, but how open most of them is, like, what do you want to know?
Yeah, it's that goes back to like the comedians in cars getting coffee thing, right? Is fundamentally through most of our profession, the people who are in it for the same core set of reasons. And if you come from that place energetically, right? If you really come from that place of, we can sit and talk about what we love about doing this work, you can have so much fun and you can really connect with people. And then when that happens, right, of course, then you naturally feel like you want to help each other. You want to give to one another. You want to lift each other up. And it gets easy, I think, to let yourself think, well, we're all competing for business. I'm like, yeah, on a planet with 8 billion people, like there's more than enough work for all of us to be busy for a long, long time. And so if you just choose, you know, how you want to approach those conversations, you can have the most wonderful conversations with people and you can get so much from it. And that's one of the things I love about our profession. I think the other side of it that I struggle with is it's getting people to that place in the first place. And that's why interviews are so great. Our profession is such a profession of people existing on their own little island. You know, just because we have these professional organizations doesn't mean that all throughout the year, people are really staying connected to one another. And I think that's something that getting into interviews, podcasts, can help you do is keep your relationships growing with people beyond, you know, you think most people aren't probably like you were in the old days going to every convention that they can go to. So they maybe have one or two a year that they do, and that's their chance to really network and connect with people. And you're like, what are you going to do for the rest of the year? You know? So finding a project like this that you can do, where you're regularly talking with colleagues, I think is an important part of growing those relationships and from a business perspective and from just a like sanity perspective of not feeling like you're locked in an office doing just your own thing day after day after day. You know, we human beings need to be connected to one another. So.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned something about how we share, because some people get the scarcity mentality. You know, someone we both know quite well, you know, Dr. Damon, the head of the NGH, as a chiropractor, I've heard him, he hasn't given that talk lately. He goes, you know, there's a chiropractor almost on every corner now.
Right.
And they're all doing okay.
Yeah.
And he goes, when I got started, we were kind of like hypnotists. We started worrying, are there too many chiropractors? And he goes, I think he even says, like, in the state where in New Hampshire, there were like two.
Yeah.
And he was one of them, you know, and he goes, so, but then you find out now there's probably hundreds of a big state. Well, and he goes, and you know, so, and yet I think the way to enlighten the field is for the leaders to say, hey, there's plenty of work, ladies and gentlemen, there's plenty of work.
There's so much. And now again, we come back to this idea of leveraging technology, right? That you don't even have to just focus on how you can be the leading hypnotist in your town. You can get yourself out there on the internet and you can reach out to people all over the world. And as long as people feel like you're the right person for them to help them solve their challenges, you can do work with people all over the world. I mean, seriously, your marketplace is nearly 8 billion people. And I think it gets easy to not recognize what a massive number that really is. It's a massive number. You just couldn't do, if all of us who are already in practice right now worked 60 hours a week you know, 52 weeks a year, we couldn't take care of 8 billion people. We just couldn't.
Right. We could barely do 80 million people. Oh, really? If you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like you say, you get known. I'm kind of like the default guy for if you have an addiction problem and you're a mental health professional, I'm getting all these calls because they're like, well, you're in our field. And,
yeah.
You know, and I'm like, yeah, we could. And through the internet, you know, I get a lot of people in the DC area calling me up. And I'm like, sure, I'll work with you. Well, they have security clearance issues, so they can't go to traditional treatment. So they call me up. And yeah, so it's something to remember. So any closing thoughts on, you know, like what you've learned doing interviews and maybe why some of us should do more interviews, reach out, and grow?
I think, let's see, I always like to do things in threes. So I'll give you three final thoughts. The first one is anyone who's watching this, don't let yourself feel intimidated by the technology. The technology is easier to use than it's ever been, and it just keeps getting better. And right along with that, don't feel like you need to have, I mean, look at behind me. It's a window and a whiteboard and a wall. I don't like have a studio. I keep everything really minimalist and simple. And that way I have found over the years, it makes people feel like I'm just being me. I'm not trying to be someone on a TV set. You can shoot on your phone at points. Sometimes that's appropriate. You know, sometimes it's not, but you don't have to buy expensive cameras and expensive microphones and do all kinds of crazy things. I think the big thing is just starting to do it and coming from a place, again, of wanting to really connect with your colleagues in an authentic way and have authentic conversations. So just start doing it and get comfortable, more and more comfortable doing it. Don't worry about technology. Just get into it and learn it and acquire it and get better over time. And then the last thing is probably if you're gonna start doing it, you gotta be consistent. You should be producing things consistently. And again, that's a, you know, what's consistent to one person, you know, might be different, but I would say you need to produce something, at least once a week. That doesn't mean you have to do an interview once a week, but it would probably be nice if you want to start leveraging interviews, you should probably do one interview a week. You could have a project like I do where, you know, you bang out a whole bunch and let people consume them for a while. But you can't just do like five interviews and then think you're going to be like famous on the internet. Right. It doesn't work like that. But you know, stay in those, simple things, keep it simple and have fun and enjoy the process.
And I want to close with a thought for you. One of the great things I heard an internet marketer guy say, what he likes about what he does, he says, I'm internet famous. I'm niche market famous. If I go to certain things, everybody knows me, right? And so people worry, oh, I'll get famous. He goes, I'm pretty famous in that world. And I don't want to say his name because, if you've studied it all, you go, I know him. But 99.9% of the people, he goes, I'm anonymous. And
that's
the
world we live in now, Will. That's such a great point. That is the world we live in. Yes.
And he goes, but you don't, we have the benefits of getting kind of famous like a movie star, but we can go to dinner in a dirty t-shirt and, you know, and not worry about it where, you know, these guys, they can't.
Yeah.
And I stress that to people. Don't worry. Yep. You're not, we're probably not going to become that level.
Yeah.
Even though you may be super niche famous in hypnosis or NLP or EFT, whatever your whatever our little niches are.
Yep.
Or in your case, stage hypnosis and the hypno interview king. You know, you're HIK. You're HIK. You're our HIK.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you for doing this, and we're gonna have some fun. I know you're getting ready to kick off your. Your version, so you're going to be working. So
thank you, buddy. Thank you so much for having me. It's so good to talk with you again.
And now you got warmed up for your interviews.
I know. I owe you. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, Will.
Bye.